I'm Lori Jones, President and CEO of Avasec Communications and host of the Integrate and Ignite Marketing Podcast. Join me and my guests, some of the world's top innovators, disruptors, and visionaries, as we explore bold and brave marketing strategies for scaling and growing your brand. Alan Adamson is the author of several books, including the recently published Seeing the How, Transforming What People Do Not Buy to Gain Market Advantage. In his career, he has worked with a broad spectrum of consumer and B2B businesses in industries ranging from packaged goods to hospitality, technology, and healthcare. A sought-after industry commentator, Alan has appeared on ABC, NBC, CNBC, and Fox Business Network, and is often quoted in publications including The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Ad Age, and Forbes. Tune into my conversation with Alan, where we talk about his new book. This is an amazing read that makes the point that disruption and innovation is what helps entrepreneurs and business leaders break into and win their chosen markets. Alan and I discuss why it's important to focus on customer experience, why brands need to start with the customer in mind, then move on to developing products, how marketers can take data-driven research on customer behavior, behavioral psychology, marketing analysis, and storytelling to see things through their customers' eyes, how Warby Parker changed the game, and the importance of understanding how an idea will fit into people's lives. Thank you so much for tuning in. Welcome to the Integrate and Ignite podcast. Welcome to the Integrate and Ignite podcast. Alan Adamson, I'm so glad to have you on the show. Welcome again, by the way.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
It's an encore interview. And we had you are one of the brand authorities, I believe. You've got this massive background working with very, very large agencies, very, very large brands. And now you're at NYU and you're actually working in the Berkeley Center for Entrepreneurship too. Tell us a little bit more about the journey that you've been on since we last spoke.
Well, two things. One is at NYU, I work with entrepreneurial startups, which is fun because lots of energy. And it led to actually to my new book because lots of the startups didn't have a better mousetrap. And we'll talk about that a little later. And I started my own consulting firm a couple of years back called Metaforce, and we're a special forces type of consulting team that does brand strategy and marketing activation. It's been a lot of fun.
I love it. So what interested you about moving from big brand, from enterprise brand, to the entrepreneurial sweet spot?
Well, you can have a lot of impact on big brands, but like aircraft carriers are hard to turn around and take a lot of horsepower. Whereas when you're working with a firm at the beginning, almost everything's on the table. You have more flexibility to change how you go to market, change what you say, impact the products, impact the experience. So it provides a nice balancing because having spent a lot of my career at big companies from Unilever on down, it's nice to be working with young entrepreneurs who want to become the next hoodie in residence.
Well, I tell you, we're gonna talk a lot about that. And you have a new book out right now. It's called Seeing the How. Tell us a little bit more about really what it was that in excited you and enticed you to actually write the book.
So, when I started in marketing in the advertising or side of the business or Unilever, it was very much focused on the product. At Unilever, it was about, what does Dove do? What is it better for your skin? What can we make the smell like? How can we make it better? Very much the focus was on the product. Mm-hmm. That's been true in marketing for a long time. But to connect the first part of our conversation with the second, when I started to talk to lots of startups at NYU, it wasn't so much about the product. It was about looking at your life and changing the way you did things. And they had a little technology, but they often took off the shelf stuff and just reimagined how it fits in. I mean, Uber, right? They didn't invent Uber, but Uber is a perfect example. People had smartphones, they had a little bit of technology and a lot of logistics to figure out how do you connect drivers and potential passengers, but it didn't require inventing a taxi or inventing, you know, the smartphone. It just brought those two worlds together.
Yeah.
So with all that, I said, gee, you know, what's going on? And it caused me to dig deeper and found out that lots of growth and innovation for big brands, small brands, big companies, small, comes by not zooming in and saying, how can I make this taste better, work better, last longer? But, you know, what, how does this idea, what I'm doing, fit into someone's lives? And how might I change it to make their life easier, better, more fun, et cetera?
Yeah, I love that. And as you were explaining that, I think there's something so unique here. It's like a transformation on how humans interact with brands. And, you know, we take a look at some of the enterprise brands that are out there, like J&J and P&G and, you know, all these massive brands, and the example that you just used with Dove. And here we are letting, you know, like product scientists really start developing products that evoke behavior in a very, very different way than a lot of those enterprise brands. And one could say tech is making that happen. But at the end of the day, we're all still human and we still use tech to get a ride instead of using, you know, a landline to get a ride. But what's happening here? Are consumers more in control and the demand is different? Or, you know, and you've worked with so many different brands for a long time. We're not going to age ourselves here, but you've had to see that transformation.
Yeah, it's been a little bit like the old story about the frog in boiling water. If you drop it into boiling water, it would jump out. But if you just increase the temperature a couple degrees every day, it's not a pretty story for the frog. So marketing has been like that. It's been changing gradually. And I actually think the pandemic, you know, was a catalyst to make a lot of stuff that had been changed dramatically.
Right.
You know, we could have used Zoom before the pandemic, or we could have used Microsoft Teams, but you would never consider using it for business. If I said to you, I'm not going to come to Denver to talk to you about, what we can do for you as a customer, and you'd say, you don't want to come out to Denver and you want me to hire you? Now, you know, it's a little different. So, yeah. So that's, you know, it's not, there are still important products that are invented that are terrific. But this is an example of how do you look at people's lives and how do you zoom out from the product? The product, if you have a great product, great. The challenge, of course, as you know, is that if you invent a better product, better mousetrap, better headphones, whatever it is, the time you have between you having the best product in the market and your competitor figuring out how to match you or beat you, it's continuously shrinking. So back in the Unilever days, Dove had a real product advantage, and it was hard for other people to have the same impact on skin. Now, you know, it's still a little bit different, but most brands, when they invent a better mousetrap, the only thing you can be sure is you will have that advantage for 3 months, 2 months, 30 days. And so if you're constantly in the business of having to fight that war, it's a really challenging.
Yeah, it sure is. I spoke at a couple Startup Week events last summer and brought forward some pretty in-depth stats regarding how, you know, entrepreneurs and startup companies succeed and a lot of areas that they fail in. And one of those areas was that they got the research wrong or they didn't do it. And a lot of what we're talking about here isn't necessarily, quote unquote, what someone would think of as research. But it really does have an underpinning of those findings that become very, very important to ultimately positioning your product at the right time in the right with the right person and so on and so forth. What is your response to that insight regarding research?
Well, research is incredibly easy and incredibly hard to do. You can ask somebody, you know, why you liked the taste of this hamburger, and they sometimes will give you the right answer, but often they won't. They'll give you the answer that you think you want to have because it's cooked perfectly and you did a nice job. So traditional research has become really difficult because there's so much that happens that people don't communicate verbally, and the consumer is changing so fast that go back to the Mad Men days, we would do consumer research on why you liked a certain cereal or a certain, you know, soft drink. And once we found out that information, that would be good for a couple of years. You know, but now everything changes fast. So, you know, when you look for these things, first of all, you have to get out of the headset of saying, I have to sell you this product. Even Steve Jobs, when he took over Apple way back when, he told his engineers, you know, stop giving me things to sell. Let's figure out how this fits into people's lives and makes their life better. And let's focus on, you know, our customers and what will be good for them, not what you've, you know, brainstormed in the engineering lab. And the same is here. It forces us to, instead of starting with our product and saying, how can I sell this to somebody, start with the consumer and say, you know, what are they up to? What's their life like? What are they doing when they shop? You know, what are they doing when they're using technology? And the better you are at seeing the customer or consumer with fresh eyes, which is really hard to do, the better off you'll be able to say, gee, you know, I think Lori could use this, you know, idea, even though she's not asking for it. You know, let's try to talk to her about that.
Right. You bring up Apple, and of course, they're an amazing part of Simon Sinek's Getting to Why. Mm-hmm. And that becomes, you know, that whole process has become something, you know, very, very iconic for a lot of startup brands. Mm-hmm. How do the two methodologies work together, seeing the how versus Simon Sinek's Getting to Why, or how are they different?
You know, if you're marketing a product, you could talk about, I'll start at the beginning, what it does, the traditional, this product makes you feel younger and look better. You could talk about how it works, the FedEx story, you know, we get things really fast because mm-hmm. all the packages fly to Memphis and the next day they're on your doorstep. You could do a little bit about, you know, who you are as a company, you know, we're fun and, you know, you want, but the last one is the why. Is, you know, why you do something, purpose. Purpose is really, really hard to do because some people interpret it only as a marketing thing. We'll just tell them we care about you and that's why we do it. We want to have you lead a healthier life. But consumers are so skeptical that delivering on a purpose is hard.
Right.
It has to be more than an ad or more than a small PR thing you do. So purpose is a very strong marketing thing, but to pull it off is really hard. Seeing the how forces you to look back at how people live, not how your product works, and say, what can I change in my customer or consumer's life that will make it better? It forces you to look at your customer with fresh eyes and see things that get a little bit of the Jerry Seinfeld thing. I may have talked about this before, which is a little bit of, do you ever wonder why they're doing this? And you just need a more of a beginner's mind, a sense of curiosity. You know, one of the things I found when I was working for big companies is you go to a beer company and everyone in the room had been in the beer business for 10, 12, 15 years. And they had such a hardwired, this is how beer is, you know, bought. This is how it's consumed at the tailgate. This is how people want it. And, you know, they're just on autopilot. And so you have to be a little bit, you know, of a Martian coming in and saying, why? And so part of seeing the how is to try to, you know, have you look at the world as if you just landed from another planet, and that, you know, and look at everything the customer does. And going back to where we started this conversation, you mean, Alan, you want to fly for an hour meeting with Lori in Denver just to say hello. It's going to take you, you know, 5 hours to get there, 4 hours to get back. You know, it's going to cost. And you think she won't like you because if you just say, let's do a quick FaceTime or Zoom, it won't be crazy. Let's try it. In other words, so part of it is, you know, post-pandemic, it seems pretty obvious we should have been using these tools.
Right.
But culturally, and we were creatures of habit, you know, if I wanted to meet a new client, even if it was only an hour meeting, I'd get on a plane.
Right. You know, it's interesting listening to you talk, you know, about the difference of why and how. And I'm having a bit of an epiphany myself. And, you know, purpose is very, very important. At early stage companies, purpose might be more important when it comes to building a culture.
Right.
Because you don't have the marketing dollars it takes to really push that purpose out.
Right.
And compete with the big dogs. But the big dogs, those enterprise companies that we've been talking about as well, they do have the marketing dollars to push it out. So I'm really, you know, it's interesting that the how, without the how, most companies won't be able to launch at all.
Exactly. It's more of a, it's closer in, but I don't want to downplay purpose. You know, ultimately it's what, as product difference is narrow and I can't see the difference between one set of earbuds and the other, I will choose the company that I think aligns with, does right things for its community, mm-hmm. you know, stand behind its product. The people there, when you talk to customer service, are all in and they're friendly. They're not just here today and gone tomorrow.
Right.
And, you know, to some extent, that's almost a table stake, but to demonstrate that, because young people want to know, not who, you know, is this the best soap for my skin or best place to do my dry cleaning? But, you know, what are they, you know, do they care about me? Do they care about what's important to me? Do they share? And so purpose is important.
All things being equal.
Right. All things being equal. But this was another attempt to, other than having a purpose, which is important, but hard to do and often long term, you know, what can you do when you're looking at your business and say, to click up one step from what am I selling and how do I get you to buy it to how might it fit into your life and make it more interesting?
I love it. In the book, you talk about 8 lenses and how we see things. We're going to talk through a few of those today. But before we get there, one thing that is very, very important to discuss with the audience, and of course, you go into great detail in the book about this, is how you have to get your eyes and your head ready before you begin to look through the quote unquote lenses. So tee that up for us, if you would.
No, it's just part is going in with some curiosity and pretending you're a beginner and getting people on your team that have not spent, if you look at many, I'll go back to marketing teams, they all went to the same school, they all are roughly the same age, you were in the same fraternity, they see the world, you know, their view is, but that's who their view is. And so part of it is
rose-colored glasses.
Right. Yeah. And so part, make sure your team has some younger people on it, older people, people who know the category, people who don't know the category, and make sure that team is open to disagreement. Because the other thing that happens in a big company is the boss says, you know, I think black is going to be the new hot color. And everyone says, oh, yeah. And so you have so much consensus that partly to see things fresh, you need to have some good debates and good discussions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, go ahead.
What advice do you have for selecting those people? I mean, it's not like you can, you know, have a quick interview and say, are you going to agree with me or disagree with me? Well, I'm always going to agree with you I'm always, you know, so what advice do you have for the founders, you know, the CEOs on building that team?
Don't only hire your best friends. Hire people that do things differently, that are see the world a little differently. Because if you only hire, you know, 4 people who are your best friends and go to the same movies and hang out in the same, you know, bar and talk about the same sports games, you'll have a view of the world, but you won't have the right perspective.
Right.
And make sure your team is also good observationally. Getting back to your first question. If I ask you, what do you drink? What do you like in the pizza? You'll give me an answer, but most people can't verbalize it. And the best marketers are still great at just watching what people do, not what they say. And so make sure you have people that are not constantly looking at a screen and pounding out notes and going from meeting to meeting. Make sure you get out, walk around, travel to different places, talk to different people, just to get your head open to new ideas. Because if you go in hardwired, this is how you sell a beer, you have some, you know, jock tell funny sports jokes. Mm-hmm. That will still work most of the time, but sooner or later, somebody else. I mean, the famous story on that is that for years, I worked with P&G a lot and some of their competitors. If you look at Gillette versus the other shaving, they were all following each other. Gillette had 3 blades, Schick had 3. You know, they were playing the exact same game until somebody said, gee, my real problem is not how many blades. My real problem is waiting at the drugstore for somebody to unlock that, or forgetting that by the time I need new blades, I got to go to the store. And so somebody thought of, gee, let's send them by mail and Dollar Shave Club. Lots of companies get into following the competition and just playing the game. And so part of getting your eyes ready is to try to zoom out of it.
I love that. There's a great author, her name is Carla Johnson, and she's written the book Rethink Innovation. And it's all about what you do going into strategy sessions to actually, you know, eliminate all the mess that is in your head. And she even suggests in the book that you go outside, everyone go outside separately. And for 20 minutes, write down everything they see, they hear, they smell, they touch, and just write it all down to get your mind free from the hustle and bustle of email of the day, so on and so forth, before you even start. We do that. We try to do it once a month. We call it Rethink Innovation Wednesday here at the agency. And we'll take a client scenario and go through the whole process to really, you know, to really think differently. I would urge our listeners today to pick up that book. It's a great starting point for really what Alan is getting to here.
Right. Because no matter how many strategy things you look at, if you're not ready to receive the message, if you are, you know, if you're myopic, or you know the answer, or you don't have the openness to listen and see other things, it doesn't matter how many marketing and innovation consultants you hire, you won't, you know, you have to be, as you said, you have to clear the memory banks and, you know, get ready to, you know, as I said in my book, you know, clean your glasses. So if you're going to look at different perspectives, you know, it doesn't matter if the glasses are foggy, it doesn't matter which way you look, you're not going to see any opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And people get too close to it and they don't open up their eyes to ultimately what could be versus what is. That's important. So let's talk through some of the different lenses here. One of them is referred to as joining forces.
So, you know, part of the opportunity is to look in the marketplace. Can you connect with somebody to, I hate to use this cliche, you know, to not just make 1 + 1 = 2, but make 1 + 1, you know, change the game completely.
Right.
Because your offer combined with their offer is going to be phenomenal. So I'll just give you one that happened last week. Of course, we'll be dated by the time people look. And it was a deal between Tesla and Ford that will allow Ford electric cars to charge at any Tesla outlet. So why is that a big joining forces for Ford? Is because if you do the research, you know, most people, even though you get a car that says it can go 200 or 300 miles, will have, you know, range anxiety. You know, they'll always be worried that when they need to go get, you know, the milk at the grocery store, you know, 10 feet before the store, they'll run out of power. And they're comfortable knowing that there's a gas station here and there. So the big challenge for electric cars is not will you run out, but, you know, your fear of running out.
Right.
And so by Ford, and so their electric cars are good, and so is GM, and so everyone has electric car. By hooking up with Tesla, now all of a sudden they have thousands of charging stations that will, that other car companies that make, you know, whether it's a GM or BMW, will struggle with, because so they're combining forces. Another example I'll give you, I worked for many years with National Geographic, and it was a great organization. And they, you know, they were really good at understanding what's happening in the environment and sharing that in television or in, back in the old days, print. But ultimately, you know, there was a lot of competition in that space, and how they covered an environmental issue in Alaska, or what's happening to the whales, or what's happening in a different geography, was not that different than you could find elsewhere. So they hooked up with a small, at that point, boat tour operator called Lindblad Travel, rebranded them as National Geographic Travel. And so when you get on a boat to look at whales, yeah, the whales are still the same, but you have a National Geographic photographer saying, Alan, you may want to take your finger out of the frame on your iPhone to get a better picture. And if you really want to get the whale breaching, Alan, point the iPhone down. And the minute you see a bubble, start shooting pictures. So by the, you know, so all of a sudden you come up with better pictures you can share with your friend. And then, you know, they have a naturalist who doesn't just say, I read this in Wikipedia, but somebody who's worked in being an environmentalist. So they created an experience. So neither brand could have done this without them. And the same with Tesla, will get a lead back to the Ford thing, because all of a sudden more people will be charging there. I'm sure Ford's going to pay something for it.
Yeah.
You give them more money to put more chargers in. And it's sort of like the, if you remember way back when there were two videotape recorders, one was Sony and one was VHS. And, you know, if you didn't get scale, the one that got scale won the game.
Now, how, so for companies that are very early stage, or they might even be a little later stage, you know, they're still involved in Series Bs, they're still building the brand.
Right.
How can joining forces, even, you know, even if the awareness might be low, the brand, you know, understanding may not be where it needs to be, how can joining forces either help or hurt a brand in that situation?
It's just a way to accelerate lots of things. So one of my startup teams at NYU has got a product, I won't give it away, that's good for runners, a nutritional product. And they're marketing it. They're started off. They've got a little some online customers, but you know clearly, if they could hook up with a running club, maybe not a sneaker, but you know other more established running brands, and say we are the choice for the obviously hard to do, but it's an example of could they connect to get scale for marketing, or could they connect to make their offer better? So if they're a running snack, are there other running beverages that they could do? So it's just about looking at your offer and saying, if I combined it, just like National Geographic combined it with a different venue to, instead of just watching it on a iPad, you know, you could actually get on a Zodiac and, you know, talk to
them. I love that.
Well, so it's just forces you to, you know, don't have to do it at the beginning, but oftentimes how you position it in people's minds.
It can be sponsorship. I mean, which is what you've just, don't think necessarily it has to be another big brand. It can be a sponsorship. And I'm laughing, kind of giggling internally here, because we did that very thing about 14 years ago. We sponsored New York Running Club. What is that? The New York City Running Club, whatever.
Roadrunners Club, I think it is.
Yeah, exactly. With a product, with one of the segments for the audience for this product, it was safety product for runners. Right. And so we partnered with them and we did the New York Marathon. We sponsored the New York Marathon to launch this product. Had a big safety event in the park, in Central Park, as people would, I believe, come across the finish line or something there.
Right.
But that is another great example of this was a company that was our first marketing foray for them, was that sponsorship.
Right. And hopefully they're strategic and not one-off promotions. But you know what I was looking for in joining forces is opening yourself up to a different experience a customer can have because of it.
Right.
And or... you know, Casper Mattress is another famous example. They were selling mattresses online. And at a point in their development, they realized that people did need to bounce on it three times and try to sleep on it for 30 seconds. And the, you know, the other brands all had their own retail stores. So they did a joint venture and they started selling them at Target and different places you could sample it and or buy it. So it was not just a joint promotion where Target is now carrying Casper. It was tied to realizing that to buy a mattress, for some people, you needed to give them a chance to lie on it.
Right.
The advantage versus other stores, you know, the partnerships they built, I think it was with West Elm at first and at Target, were better than, you know, when you go into a mattress only store, it's probably the last place you want to close your eyes and lie down on something, at least in the metropolitan area, because they're not nice places, they're discount places. But so it's to try to make your offer more interesting. It could be a joint promotion, but ideally, it will change your distribution, as in the Ford having different places to charge, or your product performance, or as a magazine, or a TV company, giving you a chance to create physical experience, not just visual experiences.
Yeah, I love those examples. One of the other lenses, it's lens four in the book, is see like a concierge.
So, you know, if you ask any customer, any client, they'll say, oh, we do great customer service. And I'm reminded of a story. I worked for a large pizza company a few years back. And they said, oh, our customers like our pizza. I went to some research with them. And how do you like it? Yes, it's good flavor. It's usually hot. I like it. Any complaints? No, it's good pizza. And then some smart moderator from the research company said, well, let me ask you one more question, Laurie. If this company went out of business, what would you do? And their answer, oh, I just got a Papa John's. So there was, they didn't care. It was not. And so even though people didn't want to hurt their moderator's feeling and say it was fine, you know, the fact that in a heartbeat, in a snap, they would just say, I'll go to the competition, meant their product wasn't
right.
that good.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Well, so, and there's so much focus on customer centricity anymore. And I think it's exactly the point that you're bringing up. You know, everyone says we've got good customer service, but in most situations, 9 out of 10 do not. Right. So if you really want to own customer centricity, you got to take it way beyond.
Exactly. You know, you have to do more than, oh, they were okay.
Yeah.
You have to get, no one shares okay. First of all, social media is a way to get this across. No one shares okay. I went in, the ice cream was cold. And, you know, I've only waited 20 minutes. They right. will share the ice cream melted and I waited an hour mm-hmm. or something extraordinary. So same with the right. airlines, you know. And so I was reminded of this. I've been lucky enough to stay in some nicer hotels mm-hmm. And some less nice hotels. When you go been to a less nice hotel, the front desk or the concierge, you say, you know, where do you have a place, you know, that's good food nearby? And they sat on the community, the open table, and they say, you know, there's this Chinese place 2 blocks down. And is it good? I don't know. It just says here it's got free. So they're solving a problem, but they're not really, I would never say, oh, I had a great experience. Mm-hmm. Nicer hotel, person looks at us and says, well, you got 2 tired kids. you know, yeah, you don't want to walk too far. Go to this restaurant here, ask for Billy. Billy will put you in a place that if your kids scream, you're not going to upset people. On the way there, there's a toy store. Why don't you go in and get him a coloring book? In other words, they will solve problems that you don't even ask for.
Exactly.
And that's what you have to do now to succeed. You have to think like a concierge, not just finding you a table within 2 miles. But what problem do you have?
It's the difference between customer service and customer focus.
Yes.
When you focus on the customer, you focus on that mom carrying a baby and mm-hmm. she's crying and the father, you know, is fit to be tied. Right. And you look at them and you see them as a human being and the behaviors that they're ready to, you know,
so you're
ready
solving
to...
a different problem.
Exactly.
Where can you get a tuna melt within 3 blocks?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's hard to do because most companies, you know, when they call you, are you happy with our service? And you'll say yes, yes, but you're not going to be happy enough to say, look, when you're staying in Cleveland, you know, you got to stay here because the people at the front desk will make your stay much easier.
Right. It's a mindset.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have, you know, back to surrounding yourself with the right people? What advice do you have for those companies, those individuals who are really trying to win at customer centricity on how they can hire the right people?
You know,
Yeah,
it's one of these really tricky things because partly I'm jumping back to part of the research. I did a little bit of research on Danny Myers and how he hires people for his restaurants. And he actually hires people that, you know, are resilient to, you know, complaining customers and always with a smile. And so part of it is if you're thinking about a customer service thing, how do you staff with people that are you know, good at listening, good at observing, good at going off script? I mean, it happens at the Genius Bar at the Apple Store. They'll pick something and they'll say, oh, by the way, do you know, have you tried this app to, you know, get rid of your duplicate contacts yet? So they will, they're not just there to hand you the phone and say, you know, put in a screen protector on, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So part of it is hiring the right people that are used to being self-directed and empowering them. To say, look, your job is to make sure that customer leaves here with a story they can't wait to say, as opposed to just if they come in and ask for a tuna melt, giving them a tuna melt as fast as you can.
I just wrote a post on, believe it or not, United Airlines, and mm-hmm. the headline was about empowerment. I was on a flight down to Phoenix several weeks ago and flying in first class, I upgraded mm-hmm. and the captain came out to introduce himself to us. And he explained to us that he was training another captain and he was going to let him do some of the, you know, the pre-work on his own. And then he'd go back and, you know, check in on him just to like, make sure that we weren't worried that he was out talking to us. He served us orange juice and water. And mm-hmm. then he went through the whole cabin, said hello to people and came back to first class and basically said, I'm here to make sure that you've got an incredible experience today. And by the end of the flight, you're going to have a note from me and my cell phone. And if there's anything that we can do to change this flight, I want you to text me. Now it's going to take me 2 to 3 days to get back to you because I'm going to be working for the next 2 to 3 days, but know that I will get back to you. That takes someone who really cares about his company, who really cares about the customer, but moreover, he's been empowered to, to make decisions that he knows will create a lifetime, you know, customer value.
Right. Exactly. Reminds me of my previous book. I had an interview with the CEO of Delta. And I asked him, I said, so what keeps you up at night? I thought fuel prices, how much a Boeing jet is, you know, air traffic control issues, you know, fuel.
Weather.
And he said, weather. And he said, hands down, it's, you know, my employees, if they don't feel excited about what they're doing every day, I'm putting a team together with pilots and flight attendants, they're coming together, they have to work as a team. And ultimately, if they're cranky, unhappy with the dental plan, unhappy with the way I took care of them last week, unhappy with something, that unhappiness is going to ruin my business.
Yeah, it's going to be transferred to the customer.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I love it. We could talk about every lens, but we just don't have enough time today, do we? One of the other lens eight is getting close to the customer.
Yeah, so, you know, again, that's a cliche that that everyone says, oh, we're very close to our customer. But, you know, as you know, most of the, you know, the cliche I used to use was you look for the leadership of most customers and they're on the executive floor, but most brands, you know, and the last time they saw a customer was when somebody brought one in to do a report, but, you know, they're not close to the customer.
Right.
So it's easier said than done. And you have to sort of think about them, not just ask them. So I give you a recent example. We, like many people, you know, a major appliance broke at the house. And I was deputized by the CEO.
At least it wasn't
wife.
3 years ago.
Wait. I was deputized by the CEO of the house to find, you know, the right. And I started to do research on one washing machine with, and they all looked white. They all looked the same. And all of a sudden I realized that, you know, I didn't have a case to take to my wife to say, this is the best one. They, you know, this one had 4 dials. This one had 2 dials. This one, you know, had, and I looked online and it was very confusing. And finally, I did sometimes what I used to do, which is maybe I'll go to Consumer Reports and see what they recommend. Because I needed to be able to have some credibility when I said we should buy this brand. And it was really hard to figure that out. And I went to Consumer Reports and it was like reading a management report. If you want long lasting, this one's long lasting. If you want better cleaning, this one's. And so Harvey balls, which are those round circles. And all of a sudden you had 25 attributes. And it was impossible to figure out, even after reading the whole report, you know, if we needed more blue socks washed than gray socks, this was the machine. You know, anyway, so recently a competitor launched about 5 years ago called Wirecutter. And Wirecutter was bought by the New York Times, I guess, about 2 years ago. And when they do a review, they say, I'll go, so I'm looking at you and you're wearing headphones. They say, if you want headphones, if you are doing podcasts, this is the best headphone for you. Here's why. Here's double click on Amazon if you want it. If you are running in the park, these are the best headphones for you. If you're listening to music, these are the best headphones. If you're using them for phone call. So they give you 5 solutions based on your problem. They didn't tell you this one has better sound and better bass and, you know, better warranty. They just, and so instantly I looked through there and I said, well, this is me. This has got to last for 10 years and it's got to clean everything. And these are this is a brand and this is the value. And I double click. So that's an example of getting close into the customer's head as to what's going on and really, you know, looking at that business.
Right.
And so many businesses have changed like that. Another favorite story is Warby Parker. Now, Warby Parker did a bunch of things, but in a distant galaxy far, far away, when you needed glasses in a metropolitan area, you had to go to a glass
optometrist. I'll say it
store.
For you.
Thank you. I was going to say optical store. And then somebody would say, try these glasses behind the counter, and you sit down, you put them on, and she'd wait there, he'd wait there, say, now try these. But you didn't know how you looked. You're looking at a little glass. The person's getting impatient with you. And somebody at Warby Parker figured out that what you really want is just to browse, try them on yourself, get the glasses outside of the glass cabinet. And so that's what happens at Warby Parker. People walk around, they try them on. When I go there, I try a few pair on them. My daughter says, "Dad, you look too dorky. You know, take those off." And you have plenty of time to pick out the frame, and you're not sitting with someone handing you one glass after the other from a counter. The experience is far better. So, you know, by putting the product right in front of the customer, it allows you to get closer to your customer.
What about those brands that have human interaction delivering the product? It's the IP, you know, consultancies, marketing firms, you know, what you and I do day in and day out. How is it that you can really get close to the customer in those situations? I mean, relationship management is a go-to, you know, making sure you're on time, you know, always providing, you know, the strongest insight if they've got to worry about an approach. I mean, all those things build, you know, trust. But what is a great example on what and companies you've seen that, you know, deliver the human element?
Really, really tough to do. But, you know, especially for service firms, which are difficult because everyone has this, we're going to offer you some advice. Here's our 4-step process. Most of the 4-steps processes are, and so how do you make your advice better?
Right.
And, you know, it gets a little bit at the back to social media that people only share extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to say, here's how we're going to win, we're going to do a better website, we're going to do better outbound marketing, and our presentations, our slides are going to be better designed. If you just try 5 things, you'll be good at all those things, but you won't be great at anything.
Right.
And so part of, I think the trick there is to pick one thing that you can be extraordinary at. It's sort of like saying, if you think you can win on better listening skills and better conversations with your clients, because your team is more empathetic, and then make that the hero. Make sure your meetings are all about conversations. Get away from PowerPoint. You know, don't have a 15-step process with a black box. So, you know, part of it is to look what you can do best, because in a world where, you know, average is over, mm-hmm. you have to figure out what can you be great at. And most people can't be great at many things.
Right.
And so part of it is to, and it could be, you could have a better process, but then you got to make sure your process is truly better, not just mm-hmm. a different flavor.
And I think in those situations, well, all behavior buys the result, mm-hmm. you know, like the result of, you know, the washing machine is, are my clothes going to be cleaner or not?
Yeah.
Or, you know, how pretty does it look? You
know, how quiet is it? You know,
yeah. If it is going to be cleaner and quieter, you know, what's the look and feel? So it's like this mental, you know, self-determination that people just walk themselves through. And you know, back to the service organization, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, do you like the people that you're working with? And all of that really ties into the relationship side of it, which becomes paramount.
Right.
So we've talked about 3 different stages or lenses here. There's 8. And in the book, do you look at each of these as a building block to the next? You really shouldn't do one without the other.
No, I think this is.
And then how do you bring it all together?
Yeah, that's a great question, Laurie. Thanks. You know, I think these are different ways to go at the market, whether you try to win on customer service or mm-hmm. whether you win on, you know, joining forces with somebody. But if you try to do all of them, I think you would end up doing all of them averagely and be invisible. So part of it is to say, of all these opportunities, which one is can grow my business? Mm. You know, which one is right for me? And which one can I execute really well?
Right.
Because, if you want to win on customer service and you have cranky people working for you who are, you know, not very friendly, and you have a very difficult product to deliver happiness on, may not be the right way to win. So I think part of it is to, as you start, or if your business isn't growing, it's a good opportunity to say, look, let's approach some alternatives to how we grow. Do we become more digital? Do we win on customer service? Do we do a joint thing? But pick one, maybe two, and see, can you execute that really well? Don't pick 3 and say, oh, we have friendly people and we are joining forces, and we are, you know, doing something more digitally. So, well, it's a choice.
It's a great way to lose team members too.
Right, exactly.
Like, you can't be all things to all people.
Right.
And you've got to really fine tune who you can go after and ultimately focus. Yep. I think especially with a lot of the founder mentality, entrepreneurial organizations, it's kind of like chasing squirrels. And this is a good way to really push people aside if you don't really focus on the areas that you know you can be successful in.
Exactly.
Alan, this is such a great conversation that we've had. I love it on so many different levels. I always love these conversations when I've actually learned something too. So thank you for your wisdom share today. It's been fantastic. What is the best way for people to buy the book?
I would like to say your local bookstore, because I'm a big proponent of shop local. But of course, you can click on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, or
it's everywhere.
Probably not the local bookstore unless you ask for it, but I have a local bookstore in my little town that if I want a book, I will tell them, you know, I like this book, and they'll get it for me, and I'll go in 3 days later and pick it up.
Well, I tell you, it's Seeing the How: Transforming What People Do Not Buy to Gain Market Advantage. It's fabulous. By the way, I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks. Guess which book I'm bringing with me.
Yeah, and make sure you pick a place with a good concierge.
I will. We're going to be in Ireland. I think that we'll be working our way through. And I might even take a picture of it with some beer as well. Who knows?
Yeah, perfect.
I'll send it to you.
It's a joint venture.
Yeah, exactly. Forces. There you go. Oh, Alan, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
I've enjoyed it. Talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This episode is complete. Head over to avasetcommunications.com for more ways to scale and grow your business. And be sure to tune in regularly for insights and motivation with host Lori Jones and her guests on the Integrate and Ignite Marketing Podcast.